Flash to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get things going. Another week begins. It is Monday, January 27th. Already getting the final month of January underway. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Vic.
Hey, buddy. How we doing?
I am good, man. Good. I'm good. We got lots to get to on this hour of the program. Daily Flames Roundtable. Lots to dive into there. And the Flames are back home and finally get a little bit of an extended stretch at home after this wacko schedule of road, then one home game, road, then one home game, then road again. Now they play six of their next seven games going into the Four Nations break. They do that on home ice, which I think could be a really big thing for them. But two games on the road over the weekend, a win in Minnesota, a loss in Winnipeg. Lots to like, some things not to like. You just want to go rapid fire and let's hit on a bunch of things that we saw over the weekend?
Yeah, because win one, lose one, as you mentioned. Some good, some bad, some indifferent, some otherwise. I think rapid fire is the way to go on this.
Text lines at 960-960 if you want to get involved. Maybe let's start on Saturday with the Kevin Ball hit. All of what has now gone into the fallout of that. So you have the hit itself, Jacob Lauko launching Ball into the end boards with a hit from behind. The five-minute major called on the ice, rescinded to a two-minute minor. Ball leaving, not returning, not playing Sunday in Minnesota. And out for the foreseeable future, as it feels like right now. And then the Ryan Lomberg fight with Lauko in their first opportunity to do so. A spirited tilt, and honestly, one of the things that really seemed to turn the entire game on Saturday. I guess what I would say, didn't like the hit, thought it was silly that they rescinded it to a two-minute minor. That just felt like a five-minute major all day. I sure did love hearing Ryan Lomberg say it post-game on Saturday, then again Sunday morning. He's like, I think I was the only guy happy that he only got two. It meant that I could go out there and exact some revenge, and he did. But I didn't like the hit. I didn't like that it was rescinded to a minor. That looked like a major all day. That looked like in the numbers all day, and you hurt a guy and knocked him out for a few games, at least one game. But I did like the response. I liked the way the Flames responded to Lomberg's fight. I liked the way they rallied after that fight. And that 8 minutes or so to wrap up the second period was the biggest reason why they won that hockey game on Saturday. So did not like the hit, did not like the call, did not like the review, but I did like the way the Flames responded on Saturday night.
First thing I'm going to touch on is Lomberg. And I don't know if there's, just because it was a two and not a five, I still feel like there would have been a way that he would have got his pound of flesh, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. And I know he kind of said, gave me the opportunity, gave me the chance, because yes, if you do give a guy a five-minute major, typically he can be excused from the fisticuffs as a result.
And also a lot of times you get a match penalty, right?
Yeah.
Like that would have been a major in a match.
Now, on the hit itself, and I'm not one to, penalties need to correlate with injuries. I just think they should call tougher penalties the whole way through, and maybe that'll help absolve it. I don't think injuries should necessarily take a part in that. I'm probably in the minority on that. I just wish they'd call penalties like that harsher.
No, I think you're in the majority there,
yeah?
Honestly.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Regardless of that, I don't know. I don't want to sit here and rag on refs because I hate when everybody does it. I don't know what you talk about with your partner when you're watching the review and go, nah, you know what? That was a two, not a five. Like, it was right from behind in a dangerous area near the end boards from the numbers. So, I mean, you hate to say it, but in a way it did help the Flames because Lomberg's fight did help spark a Calgary Flames team that's playing the first of back-to-backs on the road. So you get the benefit there, but now you're without Kevin Ball the next night. And again, we don't have a clear status update as to when he may return. Mm-hmm. So that's up in the air, and that is a big, big problem for the Calgary Flames. But to tie this just back into Saturday, yeah, don't like the hit, love the response, Love the result. Love 58 minutes of that game. If you can just throw out the footage from the last 2 minutes.
And also, you probably can. I mean, that feels more like a 5-2 win than a 5-4 win.
I feel like that's a cheap, cheap lesson to learn. It doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, that's
it's
good
just a, hey, how about you just close out a game instead of taking your foot off the pedal because you got a little bit of cushion?
Yeah, I didn't like the hit. I'm with you. Like, I don't understand what you're looking at where it's one of the more dangerous hits in hockey that could really impact a guy's life after hockey if it's an inch the other way. It was numbers all day. He didn't let up. Like, I don't... That one was not a situation where... And you know what? 5 in a match would have covered it. Don't necessarily need a suspension or anything like that, but... I was really surprised. You call it a major on the ice, then you go and see it. You see the aftermath. You see a guy get a almost certain concussion, and now all of a sudden you're rescinding it to 2 minutes.
I would have had less of a problem if they called it 2 on the ice and then went
to
5
to a major?
Because everything happens so fast. That's the thing that we always need to take into consideration, whether it's a penalty, whether it's a goal. This stuff happens lightning fast, and particularly us in the media, I feel like we need to take one game a year and sit right in the corner about 10 rows up so we can really appreciate how fast everything happens, both from a player perspective when we're on a guy. How can you see that guy through 4 bodies on the other side when we're perched up at the Saddle Dome? Same thing goes for referees. But I just don't know how you look at the replay in slow motion
given
and go,
that opportunity.
You know what? Let's take away the 5 and put the 2. But again, I don't like to be in the camp of criticizing officials just because... Every fan base believes that the officiating crew every single night is out to get them.
No, and I'm not trying to.
And I know you're
I'm
not. I know you're not.
I
know you're not. And it's just from my perspective, if I call others out on it, I'm not going to sit here and then go on the radio and say they got this wrong. And
but I'm fine. I'm fine doing that when a guy gets hurt. Like, yeah. A guy's going to miss time. He sustained a concussion on a bad hit, and they rescinded it from... I just think it sends a bad message to just everybody.
I'm surprised it wasn't even a fine after the fact, just as a sorry.
Yeah, I honestly don't understand. Chuds on Stoney says, how does the league not step in for supplemental discipline? I don't know. I have more of an issue with that whole situation than I did with the Connor Zeri hit that knocked Zeri out in Anaheim. Like, I thought there was... That felt more borderline than the one that got Ball. This reads, Quinn Hughes received a major for less earlier in the year. Definitely was a major. I didn't like it. But as you said, the response was impressive. And I also don't think that the new pairings necessarily contributed greatly to the loss Sunday in Winnipeg. I mean, there were a lot of things that went into Winnipeg on Sunday. The Jets are really good. They can finish. They didn't get a lot of stops when they needed them on Sunday. I think a lot of people would agree with that. They didn't manage the game very well, I felt like. Like, the backbreaker goal on Sunday, Miramanov out there with Uyghur, he decides to pinch really deep into the corner. Then all of a sudden... As a result, it lets the Jets go the other way. And then Miramanov gets back in time, but then goes to the wrong side. And then that gets all the coverages messed up. And Uyghur is trying to cover up for no D-man back. And then all of a sudden, Miramanov goes to his side, but Uyghur's already there. And then Uyghur has to go over to the other side. And because of that confusion caused by Miramanov's strange decision-making, all of a sudden, Vilardi walks down the wall. And you probably needed to stop there in the final minute of the second period.
Yeah, that's a backbreaker.
You got your fourth line on the ice. You got a D-man pinching. Like, you need more game management there from Miramanov, and you need more game management from Dan Vladar. I think you need a big stop there because that you're right. That's a backbreaker goal. It felt like if the Flames can get to the intermission only down one after a really good period, then maybe they've got some momentum. Instead, they played a really strong period against the best team in the West and actually had their gap to the lead widened as opposed to breaking even after 20 into the second intermission. So that I think was a really good example of when team and goaltender needed to manage things a little bit better. So I didn't really feel like the Hanley Anderson situation, bringing Bean back in with Pahal, like I didn't really feel like it contributed greatly to the way things went off the rails against Winnipeg. So I'm curious what the pairings might look like going into Tuesday's game against the number one team in the East in the Washington Capitals.
And I wonder if we, and this is just me spitballing, but I wonder if we don't see a transaction with somebody up from the Calgary Wranglers, that if Kevin Ball is going to be out for an extended period, or even if he's not, you just float through and you know what you got in Tyson Barrie, you know what you got in Hanley. I wonder if this is one of those opportunities where you're able to see somebody from the Wranglers more than just an 8 minute a night stint, where you can even cycle through a couple of them if you want, just to get a bit of a glimpse. I don't necessarily expect that to happen, but it's just one of those things that I wonder, would this be a good time? We've talked about it all season long, how carrying 8D is a logjam, and we all know how many defensemen are down with the Wranglers, and getting everybody appropriate ice time and seeing them develop and maybe leaving them down in the minors to percolate. I wonder now if that's been enough time to dedicate a game or two to one or two different players just to see. But at the same time, you do have a Tyson Barrie back off of a conditioning stint, or will have Tyson Barrie back off a conditioning stint where he hasn't played since early to mid-November, and you've still got...
Now, he did get into a couple of games over the weekend.
Well,
with the Wranglers.
Yeah. Sorry, NHL games. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I should have clarified. NHL games, that was the purpose of the conditioning stint, was to get him some sort of game action if and when he was to be inserted back into an NHL lineup, that he hasn't gone literally 2-3 months without actually seeing any form of action whatsoever. But I do wonder if there's a situation or a scenario where the Flames would entertain, all right, well, we've done it before at forward. Is this an opportunity to look at something on the back end? And that's just purely me tossing it out there, but I'd be curious.
The timing is fascinating because it comes like right after you send Barrie to the American League. So they send Barrie to the AHL for the conditioning loan. They've got 2 weeks to be down there. Then Ball goes down. They've been comfortable bringing Hanley in, but, and we'll get to Kerins in a second, but they've sent Kerins down, and I wonder if that might be to think about bringing up a blue liner so they have an extra body there. Now, because Barrie's playing in the American League, they are at home, so they've got a little bit more options, and it's a little bit less difficult. But, you know, that would mean that they'd go with 12 forwards, 7 defensemen, because Barrie still counts on the roster and still counts on the cap. Well, cap doesn't really matter all that much, but still counts on the roster while he's on the conditioning loan. It does limit you a little bit. But yeah, I definitely wondered when they sent Kerins down, because we're not expecting this to be like super long term for Ball, but, you know, decent opportunity that it's multiple games that he misses. Do you want to your point, try a Kuznetsov? Do you want to your point, try a Ilya Solovyov? Kuznetsov would be the guy that I'd be most interested in, just because all the coaches have spoken so highly of just how steady he's been. And, you know, could you try him with an Anderson in this situation? That'd be interesting to see. Could you try a Bean with Anderson and try a Kuznetsov or Solovyov with Pahal? Those are options that they could try. And that's not even a knock on Hanley. Maybe you can still keep Hanley in, put Hanley back with Uyghur and Miramanov, who really struggled against Winnipeg, can be the healthy scratch. But I do think you have some options. And so I am curious to see how that plays out, because, again, it doesn't feel like Ball's going to be out super long term, but it might be, it might be a week or two, and it might take him out for, you know, a good chunk of this 7 games before they hit the break.
Well, and the caveat here is the Wranglers are sitting at home. They play in Abbotsford on the weekend upcoming, but as far as I'm aware, they're back here in Calgary. So
indeed,
you've got a couple games where you could test this out, where you bring one up, and if you're happy or not happy, you can flip them around or do whatever you need to. It feels like this could be an opportunity to see what you've got in your more, this is going to be a weird term, but your veteran youngsters that are with the Wranglers, not necessarily a Brustevich, who's still a first year pro, not necessarily a player of that ilk or Grishnikov or what have you, but more, you know, your 24-year-old defenseman, your 23-year-old defenseman that do have a lot of pro experience. So we've talked about it a lot where, okay, there's been an injury on the main roster, whether it's a Mantha, whether it's a Connor Zary, it's
Justin Kirkland,
it's a next man up. It gives an opportunity to certain players that were with the Wranglers and now solidified themselves with the, or maybe not have solidified themselves with the Flames in the case of Walker Dewar, but it seems like it could be a tailor-made, I don't want to say excuse, but again, next man up mentality.
It's an opportunity for sure.
It's opportunity for somebody to perhaps put themselves on the radar, on the NHL radar, as opposed to just shining with the Wranglers.
So how do we feel about Rory Karen's going down? So he played the four games on the road, 4 points in four games. He's one of a few guys who struggles Thursday against Buffalo. He gets benched for the final period and a bit against the Sabres. Doesn't play either Saturday or Sunday, and now has been returned to the American League. And I feel bad for the guy because I think I would have liked to see him, and who knows, maybe he does come back up, so I don't want to throw that completely out. Maybe this is just a paper thing that they have him down for a couple of days, and then he comes back up. I don't know for sure, but I do wonder, just based on the Wranglers saying, look who's back and all that type of stuff, it does feel like this might be Karen's going back. And so if that's the case, I feel a little bad for him because, okay, did I think he struggled against Buffalo? Yes. And then the circumstances kind of aligned so that Pelche got the call onto the Kadri line. And then in two games on the road, a new line that resulted of Sharangovich with Kuzmenko and Pospisil was really good. I thought that was Calgary's best line on the road trip in both games. And so now you're like, oh, well then, and I personally, and I don't think Craig Conroy and the Flames want Karen's on the fourth line. So just based on circumstance, I feel bad for him. I feel like he deserved a longer run based on what he did, but it's kind of like, okay, for now, with the way things are shaping up, he probably wasn't going to play in the top nine all of a sudden. So let's not have him play on the fourth line. Let's send him back to the Wranglers. And that could only be for, remember, Coronado was only down for a week and then came back up.
Played two games.
I could see that being a similar circumstance where, for the time being, they kind of like the way the forwards worked on the road trip. You've got the Kadri line. Obviously, you got the Backlund line. Now, all of a sudden, Sharangovich, Kuzmenko, Pospisil have found something, and Kuzmenko's played his two best games of the season back-to-back. You're like, okay, well, if there's not going to be a natural spot for Karens there, then don't put him on the fourth line, because then he's not going to be playing. I'd rather have him in the American League than the fourth line. So, yeah, I would have liked to see him more. I thought he deserved a little bit more of a look, especially after what he did in those four road games. And yet it kind of feels like the circumstances just align. We're like, okay, for now, waiver exempt. Let's move him back. Clark Bishop's a better fit on the fourth line. Even Kevin Rooney, who's been really struggling, is a better fit on the fourth line. I have not been in love with the fourth line for quite some time. And I think that there are some things they could look at there down the road. But I also don't want my 23-year-old, you know, potential prospect or definite prospect, I don't want him playing fourth line minutes in the NHL right now.
I don't want him playing 6 minutes of 5-on-5 and then maybe sprinkling in some second power play unit. I think he's much better served from a development standpoint being with the Wranglers and playing 18, 19 minutes a night in more scenarios and more situations. I'm curious to see whether or not this is a one or two or four game sort of assignment, if you will, before he gets recalled. If something happens in Calgary's top nine that Ryan Huska isn't super thrilled with and wants to re-inject Rory Karens in, I could see a scenario like that. On the flip side, I am a little concerned about his pace of play at this level. I think this was an absolute smash home run educational tool for Rory Karens in terms of what you can expect life to be at the NHL level, both playing back to backs and three and seeing three and four sets and seeing how you can fluctuate up and down a lineup and getting special teams and not getting special teams. But for me, a lot of it was evaluating Karens in terms of his pacing at the NHL level versus the AHL level. I do feel like he was about a quarter step behind where you kind of hoped he would be. So I wonder if it's a situation where you've got the taste, you know what you need to work on, you can work on it in ample time at the AHL level. And I know the NHL has shifted a little bit. I know for the longest time it was, you know, the NHL isn't a developmental league. It's a you're done league. I'll push back on that a little bit because you do see younger players.
It's turning
get
more and more into a development league.
Right, to grow. But I do think the opportunity to grow and develop, knowing what you know now versus what you did 2 weeks ago, is better applied at the AHL level and learning to how to bridge that gap a little bit, because I do think the instinct is there. The touch is certainly there. My only concern in seeing this, again, the small sample size, and you got to love 4 assists in 5 games and a +3 rating, but I am a little concerned or wondering if he can take what he's learned at the NHL level, apply it to the AHL level. So when he does, he will come up again at some point. I'm basically guaranteeing you we'll see him again at some point this season. But I wonder if he can take what he learned in that short time, apply it at the AHL level. So when he comes back again to the Flames, he's that much sharper.
Yeah. I'm not even disagreeing with the what you said there, because I did think, especially as that road trip went along and then definitely against the Sabres, I did feel like the pace and the overall details of the NHL, which, as we know, like, there's this is cream of the crop, so like everything,
it's a big jump.
Everything has got to be spot on, and I did feel like there were some areas where, as a line, they struggled a little bit, and I felt for a few of those games, the Sharon Govich line with Kerins and whoever was on it was underwater a little bit more. And then all of a sudden you put Sharon Govich with Kuzmenko and Pospisil, and they start clicking and they start generating offensively. So, like, I get what you're saying. It's kind of just too bad the circumstances went the way they did, because you don't kind of just fluke your way to 4 points in four games.
Nope.
Either. And he made some really savvy plays to do that. And for a team that is starved for offense, you know, you need guys who can be creative and you need guys who can make savvy plays that can generate offense. And I'm not suggesting that this guy was going to be point per game the rest of the way. I don't disagree with the decision based on circumstance. I just feel bad for the guy that the circumstances went the way they did the game. Like, I was fully on board with him coming out of the lineup after the Buffalo game, give him a day to rest, and then come back in. But then all of a sudden, the way the Sharon Govich line played, there wasn't a natural spot anymore for him to come back in, and here we are. So you're kind of reacting on the fly is what I feel like the Flames are doing here.
Yeah, and I do think you need to play him in a top nine role. I don't think you're doing him any favors in a fourth line role. But let's also keep in mind, four of the five games he played were road games, and those four road games, 3-4 to start his. Now, granted, you were in St. Louis for back-to-back games, so you don't have to necessarily worry about the travel, but playing 3-4 nights while making your NHL debut and the emotions and the adrenaline and all of that, that can affect pacing the further down you go in that little five-game stint.
Last thing that we'll talk about is the goaltending, and we did allude to it a little bit, and we all understand where this has gone. We all understand that this has turned into Dustin Wolf's net for the time being. But
you need another save or two.
And you need your backup to be able to get you some wins when it's his turn. And I'm not putting this all on Vladar. Like, the circumstances have not been easy. But he hasn't won a game in more than a month. It's been a month
December
and a half.
December 10th?
December 10th against Nashville on the road was the last time that Dan Vladar won a game. And since that time, he got blown out by Tampa Bay. Again, not just his fault. Lost that overtime game to Ottawa at the Dome. The high stick on Huberdeau game. He played so well in Vegas. Posted a .944 save percentage. Made 34 on 36.
Yeah.
Lost. Not so good against Utah at home. I thought he was fine against St. Louis on the road, but the team had no offense for him. And then against Winnipeg, thought he really struggled. It's just like, okay, at what point do the Flames maybe start looking for an upgrade there? And I don't think it's yet, but Vladar's going to start likely again Sunday in Seattle. He needs to pick up a win here in his next start. Like, we're starting to get to the point where that this can't turn into what it was when Kipper was here. This can't turn into,
you can't do that to a rookie goalie. No.
I'm not even just talking about like the workload. I'm talking about, this can't turn into every time you don't play Kiprusoff, it's a guaranteed loss night. Right. And again, it feels like I'm just hanging it all on number 80, and I'm not, because the team is scoring less than, I think it's now more than 0.6 goals per game less for Vladar than for Wolf. And a massive chunk of that is because of the circumstances. A massive chunk of that is because of the games that Vladar has been put in for. But at some point, you do need a win on a night when your backup starts. So, you know, you're going to have confidence in these next three home games. You got Washington, Anaheim, Detroit, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Then you're into Seattle on Sunday. Another stretch of three games in four nights. Another tough circumstance for Vladar, but that's likely the next game that he's going to start, unless they decide to switch the formula and go Vladar in the first game and Wolf in the second. But you, at some point, you do need a win from your backup. And if that continues to not be the case, I do wonder if kind of in that Four Nations break, if the Flames really start looking at maybe seeing if there's an upgrade. And I'm not trying to suggest they should start doing that now or that it needs to happen, but you're going to need to manage Wolf's rest and workload down the stretch. People were calling for him. Like, how could they not have started Wolf against Winnipeg? Because it was the third game in four nights in the second half of back-to-back. You can't play him every night. But then at the same time, you need your team to win on the night the backup goes. So how do you start making that more of a possibility?
I will concede to you, because it's just fact. You can't, there's no way around it, that getting over half a goal less per game in terms of run support is taxing on a goalie. And you look to that game he played against St. Louis where he stopped 23 of 25, came away with a loss. That's a 920 save percentage. Or that Vegas game that you mentioned where he stopped 34 of 36 and came away with a loss. But those are the only two starts in his last eight where he's had a save percentage north of 900.
Yep.
So you've got to also help yourself to a degree. And like we've got 833, 850, 692, that eight goal against game against Tampa Bay, which somehow I've completely forgotten about.
The team hung him out to dry so bad that night.
Yeah, but that's not the one where I'm sitting here going, you got to help yourself out.
That was six points for Kucherov.
That was a complete abandonment of anything blue line in terms of backdoor tap-ins and two-on-ones, odd man rushes, power play, you name it.
Like, he didn't stand a chance that night.
There's still ample opportunity in this eight-game run where if you're only coming out with a 25% chance of being north of 900 on the save percentage, 9 of 10, you got to find a way to help yourself out too, which leads back to your question about if this is what you're getting, at what point do you either have to make a change or what can you do on the Dustin Wolf front where you're rolling him out more but not just draining the batteries to zero?
Like, it was 1,000% the right call to start Vladar on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And yet you still needed a better performance from him, so you gave yourself a better chance to win.
It felt like should have been a 24-save night, not a 22-save night.
Feels like the next few starts here are pretty big for number 80. It feels like if it's only... So they got seven games to go until the break, six of them at home.
Six at home, yeah.
They go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So does Wolf start six of seven knowing that there's a break?
No.
Or do you get Vladar? Do you find another place to get Vladar in? Like, who's that? Who's the second last game against
Colorado Avalanche on the Thursday?
Maybe not that one.
No. So you've got Seattle twice on that last week. So I wonder if there's the opportunity to go Vladar on the second of back-to-backs on Sunday and then give him the weekend game. But I don't know a scenario where you can roll six or seven for Wolf unless you're comfortable with what you're seeing day in, day out from his energy level and knowing that he's going to get 2 weeks off afterwards.
Let's work through that quickly. Say that they do decide to do that. Say they decide to go Vladar in the two games against Seattle. I like that as a hypothetical. Like, those are massive games for him.
Those are massive games for the Flames.
They are divisional games. They are, but I'm just saying, like, In the
scope of Dan Vladar.
Pinhole conversation. Like, that's a massive two games for Vladar because if all of a sudden it goes the same way, like social media was all over him. And I'm not suggesting that Craig Conroy reacts to social media, nor should he. But I just like, at some point, if you're not getting wins when the backup starts, I think maybe you have to. And I personally don't think it should be Cooley who comes up because I want Cooley playing all the games in the American League. I want him number one-ing down. That's not a term, but I want him playing the number one minutes in the American League for the rest of this season because he's never played a full season as a number one at the AHL.
Isn't he already
at
a career high in games played as a pro?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you want him to continue to be doing that as opposed to just spelling off Wolf at the NHL level, although if Cooley puts together any sort of similar run that he has in the American Hockey League. And again, it's not necessarily directly transferable, but maybe that helps balance it back to a 60-40. But to bring this back to Dan Vladar, the goaltender that started this conversation, his next two starts, regardless of where they are, if he's getting them before this break, which I feel like based on goalie scheduling, he will, massive games.
Yep.
Massive games for number 80.
And I think massive for the team in front of them because, you know, you hear from the guys like they still want to.
Oh, yeah, they're pulling
for
still,
them. They
believe
they want to win for them. And so, yeah, I think however many games he's got between now and the Four Nations break, boy, that is. They feel like they're going to be big ones. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Speaking of the Four Nations break, you know what's going to be happening during that break? The Four Nations Faceoff. For the first time ever, February 12th to 20th, it's the Four Nations Faceoff in Montreal and Boston, Canada, Finland, Sweden, and the United States competing. And we're a proud partner of the event. We're giving you the chance to win a VIP trip to watch the game. It's Rogers Beyond the Seat giving away four pairs of tickets plus travel and accommodations to the Four Nations with a new winner being picked every week until February 7th. So you still have plenty of time to enter to win. We have got flight, accommodations, and tickets for a Four Nations game. Learn more and enter to win at rogers.com/Four Nations. And of course, you can watch every single game of the Four Nations Face-Off exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. And then if you are interested in winning, you want to enter one more time that website. It's rogers.com/Four Nations.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Happy Monday, and it's time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers, and now Derek Wills joins us, the voice of the Flames, to complete our Monday Roundtable. Gents, outside of the Buffalo game on Thursday, where Andre Kuzmenko was one of the few players that was sat down for the entire third period, that's three really impressive games in four outings. Scores the game winner last Saturday in Winnipeg, is a big part of, and scores the game winner again this past Saturday in Minnesota with 3 points. First multi-goal game, first three-point game of the season. No point Sunday in Winnipeg, yet was probably Calgary's most dynamic offensive player, at least from this vantage point. So, gents, how encouraged are we now by the last week and a bit from Andre Kuzmenko?
Very encouraged. So he had 3 shots on goal in each of the last two games. Do you know how many times in the first 34 games of the season he had more than 2 shots on goal?
Zero.
Zero. So for me, that's the most encouraging thing, is that he's putting himself in a position to shoot the puck, and he's actually shooting the puck, which is what we've all been yelling at him to do all season long. And I'm guaranteeing you the Flames coaching staff has been doing the same, and I'm guessing his Flames teammates have been doing the same, because his shot, as we've talked about ad nauseum this season, is his best weapon. So it's great to see him finally using it. But I'm a strong believer that confident hockey players shoot the puck. Unconfident hockey players do not shoot the puck. He looked like an unconfident guy for most of the season. And I'm sure this season's been a struggle for him. As a matter of fact, I know this season's been a struggle for him because I had a great chat with him on the road last week. So, you know, Andre Kuzmenko was a guy who has to at least be a threat to score in order to be effective. If he's not at least that, and on a pretty consistent basis, scoring goals and producing points for you, I don't think he brings a lot else to the table, but the hardest thing to do in this sport is to put the puck in your opponent's net, because the other team's trying to do everything that they can to prevent you from doing that. So the fact that Andre Kuzmenko, who has struggled mightily all season long, has 3 goals and 4 points in the last 4 games, and that's with a bad game against the Sabres mixed in there, and that he's starting to shoot the puck and look like his old self when he scored 39 goals in his rookie season and then 22 goals in his sophomore season. I think it's a huge development for him in a contract year and for the Flames, who have struggled to score for most of the season. Guys, it's no coincidence the Flames have been scoring more because Andre Kuzmenko has finally been chipping in.
Fellas, I don't know how I want to answer this question. I feel like I'm going to be half to three quarter. I'm going to still try, Pat. No need for the round of applause just yet. I'm not just tapping and passing it over to you.
I just know how confusing this player can be.
You know what?
Interesting. He can be very interesting.
More ways than one.
Yeah. He's a very interesting player.
So here's where I'm like half Debbie Downer or pessimistic or whatever. Three good games doesn't erase 33 mediocre to bad games for me. And so perhaps I'm more jaded in that sense, or I'm looking back and going, well, you've got a long ways to go before you climb your way back up the stats page and just the general sort of, you know, comfort level for me anyways. But then I also go back and I look, and this is a player that finished with 9 goals and 17 points in 11 games for the Flames last year. That was fifth in the NHL scoring. His 9 goals was second only to Kirill Kaprizov. And I know full well how streaky this player is. That's been his MO throughout his entire NHL career, where he can be absolutely invisible for months, but he finds that little sliver, that little window, and gets hot. And suddenly he's one of the top 5, top 10, top 20, top 50 point producers in the NHL. And I don't know what to expect from him right now, where, yes, he has found some momentum. He certainly, to your point, Wills, he's found a lot of confidence. It's night and day the player he looks like when he's on versus when he's off. And when he's on, look out. He's the player that we've seen in, you know, those three games that Pat's referencing. I just don't know where I am on how encouraged am I. Well, I mean, it's a lot more encouraging than the alternative from what we've seen from the first 33-ish games of the season. Maybe you can exclude one or two off the hop of the start of the season because he was productive games 1 and 2. But I don't know how encouraged I am just yet because the sample size of month after month of, again, not even registering a shot, not registering a shot attempt, not being able to land more than two on net for a large duration of the season. Then suddenly a light bulb turns on or something clicks, or, you know, he puts his left skate on first instead of his right skate, and suddenly everything's okay again. I am just so confused about this player, but you have to be encouraged by the fact that when he's on, absolutely dynamic. I just need a larger sample size of him being on.
For
I think.
Sure. And I do too. Like, I'm not ready to sit here and say, Kuzmenko is back, and now watch out. He's going to be the same player he was down the stretch last year, or the same player he was in his first NHL season. But it's been too up and down over the last two seasons for me to say that. That being said, it's very encouraging, and maybe, Willsy, to your point, him shooting more and thus creating more, and that line is generating. Like, that's the other real positive thing, is that the line with him, Sharangovich, and Pospisil has been pretty impressive too. That's a big reason why I think the Flames sent Kerins back down, is because that line in the one game they decided to sit Kerins out came together and played really well on Saturday, and then followed that up into Sunday too. So I think that there's just now no longer a natural place for Kerins to play for the time being in the top 9, so it makes way more sense to have him in the American League. We talked about that a little earlier, but I digress. On the Kuzmenko front, it's super encouraging, and you want to see more of it. And it's, you know, there are, I think, two real benefits if this continues. One, all of a sudden, maybe trade value returns. Maybe that becomes something that they can actually exploit, and maybe there is a team or two that's willing to actually talk about giving up some sort of asset to bring Kuzmenko in between now and March 7th. And if that's not the case, well, even still, he does give you a little bit of a boost in offense for the rest of the season before these two sides likely go in their different directions. So, you know, there's two different ways that this can be really positive for the Flames, whether it be them being able to all of a sudden recoup an asset or bring back an asset, or if it just means he really helps them in terms of how they generate, maybe gives them a little bit of a boost to their power play again. Neither of those things are bad for the Flames going down the stretch here.
No, definitely not. I mean, this is a team that has struggled to score for most of the season, and one of the big reasons why is Andre Kuzmenko has struggled to score for most of the season. He should be one of your top goal getters. Yegor Sharangovich, he started to find his game as well. And, you know, he struggled for most of the year. So huge developments for a Flames team that is certainly missing the likes of Anthony Mantha and Justin Kirkland, who are both out for the season. Obviously missing Connor Zeri, who thankfully isn't going to be out for the season. And, you know, if Andrei Kuzmenko continues to play this way and the Flames decide to keep him past the NHL's trade deadline, when Connor Zeri comes back, it gives you some really interesting options as far as how you want to structure your top nine. Because one of the reasons why that third line was put together is because they weren't getting enough for Martin Pospisil playing on the right side of a line with Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau. So they demote him and promote Jacob Pelche. So in order to keep that line intact, Pelche has to keep doing what he's been doing. I would argue he was probably the best guy on that line in the Flames' loss to the Jets on Sunday night. So, so far, so good. In that instance, the second line, I just can't see them breaking it up. Why would you? Michael Backlund between Blake Coleman and Matt Coronato just works. And they've been looking for a third line for most of the season. They found a couple of different looking third lines of late that have helped them score some goals. And right now, I do like the looks of Yegor Sharangovich in between, you know, two guys who are kind of trying to find their place in this world, or at least on this team, in Martin Pospisil and Andrei Kuzmenko. But, you know, this is a Flames team that doesn't have a ton of depth up front, and they really need all four lines playing well. And, you know, right now, their biggest problem seems to be that fourth line's lacking a little bit of an identity. So it's good to have three lines going. We'll see if they can get that fourth one going. But yeah, liking what I'm seeing from Kuzmenko right now. And it kind of feels like anything he gives you at this point in time is just a bonus based on how most of the season's gone.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And to touch on Pat's point, where it's only good for the player and good for the team if he does get on a roll, because he either helps you score goals and win games now, or he helps boost his trade value. I'm just leery of a guy that scores 3-3 after only having two shots total in his previous eight and having no goals in his previous 28. But, I mean, you've got to be more encouraged today than you were last week at this time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what, Aaron?
Yep.
First of all, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays, Mr. case of the glass Mondays. Half empty over there.
Thank you.
I just think it's such a positive development for Andrei Kuzmenko, because if he wants to stay in North America on anything but, you know, a league minimum contract or maybe even a PTO, he has to have a strong finish to the season. But again, I come back to confidence. It's such a funny thing. Life in general is so much harder if you're not confident. And hockey in general is so much harder if you're not confident, especially when you're the type of player that Andrei Kuzmenko is. But in the last handful of games, beyond the results, he has just looked like a different player. You know, he's got that swagger back.
Yep.
He's got great edges. He's been using them again. He's got a great shot. He's been using it again. Man, I'm just hoping this continues for the Flames, because it's been fun to watch.
Yeah. Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. Guys, I don't ask this question in a sarcastic way. I don't ask this question in a snarky way. But, you know, going into Tuesday's game, the first of a three-game homestand, the Washington Capitals are the number one team in the NHL with a .724 points percentage. They sit tied with Winnipeg with 71 points atop the NHL's overall standings, but with two fewer games played. This, remember, was a team that snuck into the playoffs last year and had a goal differential way in the minus, and was kind of like the team that you're like, no, there's no way they're going to make the playoffs. Like, eventually the smoke and mirrors wear off, and yet there they were playing playoff hockey last year. Where did this team come from? As Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals get set to enter the Saddle Dome on Tuesday night, where the hell did this Washington Capitals team come from, guys?
Yeah, I mean, last season, one bad team was going to make the playoffs in the East, and that bad team was the Capitals. And I give them credit for finding a way in. There's something to be said about just doing that. But certainly, I don't think they were a threat to beat anybody in the Stanley Cup playoffs last season. And, you know, truth be told, I wasn't expecting a lot from them this season. Goaltending's obviously been huge for them, and it's great to see Calgary native Logan Thompson get rewarded with a contract extension today. It feels fitting with him being in his hometown, getting ready for a game against the Flames tomorrow night. But when I take a look at this roster, The first thing that jumps out to me is that a couple of young players have taken a step. So Alexi Protas is having an excellent season, as is Connor McMichael, who's not Connor McDavid, but he's a pretty good young player. So that's where I would start. Number two, it looks like Pierre-Luc Dubois may have finally found a home, because he did not look like a very good fit with his last three teams. And basically, it looked like teams were just trying to get rid of him and get rid of his contract. But, you know, he's off to a really strong start with the Capitals this season, 10 goals and 39 points and plus 18 in 49 games this season. Dylan Strome is having an excellent season. You know, Tom Wilson's doing what he does, and that's being hard to play against. And, you know, he's got 20 goals. They've got three 20-goal scorers on their team already. So putting the puck in the net has not been a problem for the Capitals this season. Really like the Jacob Chychrun addition on their blue line. So just a team where everything feels like it's kind of come together for them. Again, they've had a couple of young players who have taken a step. They've had some veteran players who maybe after a down season or two have found their form again. And most important position in the sport, maybe in any sport, is the goaltender. And they've certainly had good goaltending this season.
Wilsey took every single one of my answers. Every single one of them, Wilsey. You checked all the boxes. I had
What you get for having a case of the monkeys on Mondays.
I had a three-prong approach as to what happened to the Washington Capitals. Youth taking a step. You mentioned Protas and McMichael. I'll throw Rasmus Sandin in there, who's got 18 points and is playing nearly 20 minutes a night. The retool of Dubois, Chychrun. And even throw Mangiapane in there because he's got 10 goals. That'd be tied for fourth on the Flames. Not that it works that way, but just to put some perspective in on it. Because the point total isn't all that eye-popping, but still hitting double digits in goals is there. And then, of course, Logan Thompson being first in the NHL in goals, save above expected per 60 minutes at .998, basically saving one extra per game. That goes a long way. Just a little perspective to tie it to the Flames again as well. Wolf is 13th by comparison at 4.24. So that's the kind of goal thing. Imagine how good you've seen Wolf. Logan Thompson at 998 is absolutely bonkers. So yeah, youth, retool, goaltending.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm just going to hone it into goaltending. I'll add some numbers on that. And I'm not trying to take anything away. I'm not saying you guys are wrong on the other ones, because you're right. I mean, the move to moving McMichael to the wing early in the year, where I think, you know, there were a lot of people who thought McMichael might be one of the players that is on the move, and that Washington might be moving on from him. And there was plenty of talk that, you know, could McMichael be a guy that the Flames go after to solve their center
market
ice
inefficiency.
Position, market inefficiency, right? Then all of a sudden he gets moved to the wing, and now he's been a complete revelation. And you're right about Protas, and, you know, Ovechkin is still who he is. And after a really slow start for the Grade 8, he's now back to being, you know, we now are just waiting for him to break the record, which, you know, there was a time where it was a debate that he was going to break the record. Now he's going to. We know it. He's going to end up the best goal scorer in the history of the game. But when you take a look at the goaltending numbers, goaltending was a massive reason why they made it last year, because Charlie Lindgren was the revelation. This year, Lindgren's been good, but Logan Thompson, as you mentioned, Wilsey, has been the revelation. Just got the six-year extension, the Calgarian, at just under $6 million. And as a result, good Lindgren, incredible Thompson, and you've got the number one goaltending team in the NHL at .913 for their save percentage. Better than the Jets, better than the Stars. Like, this is the number one goaltending team in the NHL by team save percentage. And that you can't overstate how important that has been. They're the number 7 5-on-5 save percentage team, number one save percentage team overall. They can count on both guys going in to pick up a win for them. So yeah, it's not something I saw coming. I was like, oh, well, I mean, after last year, it's not like they made a bunch of huge additions or anything like that, albeit, you know, the Chychrun ad was a big one in the offseason that not a lot of people saw coming. But it's not like they revamped their team. They're essentially the same group they were last year, add Thompson, but, you know, they were like minus 35 to make the playoffs in goal differential.
Minus 37.
Minus 37?
Detroit was plus 4 and finished behind them,
yeah,
as was Pittsburgh.
And this year, Will's either plus 53 on their goal differential. Like, this is
bonkers.
It's as surprising. Look, if the Flames are the surprise story of the Western Conference, which I think they probably are when you take a look at the expectations coming into the season, then undoubtedly the Capitals are the surprise season in the East, and could very well make the argument the Capitals are the biggest surprise anywhere in the NHL this year.
Yeah, and I do love the Logan Thompson story. I mean, the guy's path to the National Hockey League included a stop at Brock University, where he played for the Badgers. So we're not talking about the Wisconsin Badgers here. We're talking about U Sports. So just a crazy path, and happy for him. I do wonder if some of the numbers you guys talked about as far as save percentage and goals saved above expected are sustainable. But I guess the good news for the Caps is they have scored so much. Even if those numbers do drop a little bit, I think they're still going to be okay. Now, I look at them atop the Eastern Conference, and I'm still not sure I'm buying them as a Stanley Cup contender, but you know, we're almost 50 games into the season here. So this is not smoke and mirrors this deep into the year. So they're obviously a good hockey team, well-coached. Spencer Carberry, you know, first-time head coach in the league, has done a really good, nice job there. So looking forward to the game tomorrow night. And guys, I would just say that I've been thinking about it today after I did an appearance on Capitals radio this morning. And now, how lucky are we Calgary here to have an opportunity to see players like Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin come through town? I mean, decades down the road, we're going to be looking at those two guys as two of the best players to ever play the game. Two guys who might be on the NHL's Mount Rushmore. So just a great opportunity to head to the Dome tomorrow night to watch the Great Eight, who's now less than 20 goals away from passing the Great One for most in NHL history. So it's going to be fun to watch that chase, and looking forward to a good hockey game tomorrow night.
All right, Willsy, be well. We will talk to you Tuesday on game day.
Okay, guys. And the good news, Aaron, tomorrow's Tuesday.
Thanks, buddy. Monday. Appreciate you.
What a case Bye, of guys. Mondays. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Cam Hughes. Thanks to Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers. And the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you every day by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.